Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Because really, you're going to open up the special thing just to have Bridget yell at you? What is that?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Exactly what you should do.
Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we are making today make sense every single day, except weekends.
Yes, and I am Kimberly Adams. Thank you for joining us. It is What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, the day of the week where we get to answer the questions that you all send us. And if you haven't sent us a question yet, you can. You can send it by a email to makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can leave us a voicemail at the brand spanking new number. Congratulations, all. 508-827-6278, also known as 508-82-SMART.
All props to Bridget Bonner for getting that number set up. We begin, as we do on Wednesdays, with your questions. Tokyo Olympics, our topic number one. Here we go.
Mm-hmm. This is Dylan in Tokyo, Japan, where it seems like the 2020 Tokyo Olympics are happening after all. I had read that canceling the games this year would have made the International Olympic Committee lose out on 75% of its four-year revenue cycle. But as I sit here waiting for my first dose of the COVID vaccine, while watching IOC executives arrive at their five-star hotel, I can't help but wonder, where does this money go?
Yeah.
I hear it mostly comes in from broadcasting licenses, but how is it spent? I can't imagine a cancellation this year would have caused bankruptcy and cancellation of future Olympics. Thanks for making us smart.
Cool that that question comes from Tokyo, by the way. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but I mean, Japan has one of the larger, you know, proportions of older residents in the world,
mm-hmm.
and as in aka the group most vulnerable to COVID, and still a pretty low vaccination rate. So I mean, scary times to have people coming in from all over, especially a lot of countries that also have pretty low vaccination rates.
Totally.
Yeah, bad news. But I guess to answer the question, where does the money go? I mean, if you believe the International Olympic Committee,
right,
they say 10% goes to operations, that's employee salaries and benefits, and that the other 90% goes to Olympic Games and athlete development, that's like scholarships and training facilities and mm-hmm. all of those things. I have skepticism in my voice because of decades of corruption scandals with the Olympic committees, and it's unregulated. It's its own thing, not accountable to anybody. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the International Olympic Committee is its own fiefdom, right? And therein lies the challenge. And there have been corruption scandals after corruption scandals after corruption scandals. Obviously, all the money not all. Huge proportion of the money comes from television broadcast rights. NBC,
75%.
I think this year is paying bajillions of dollars, and that money gets dispersed however the IOC tells us it gets dispersed. But one does have to wonder, and to the last part of the question, can't imagine it would have bankrupted future games. Yeah, I think that's probably right. You know, had this year's Olympics just had to be canceled for whatever reason, there would have been losses. But I'm telling you, Beijing in 2022 would have happened for sure.
And there's a pretty damning column in the New Republic about the reasons that this writer and many others believe that the Tokyo Olympics should have been canceled, not just because of the vaccine, the lack of a vaccine and the COVID risk, but also because Olympics tend to be a bad deal for cities. They're citing research showing that every single Olympics since 1960 has gone over budget. Olympics have displaced more than 2 million people since 1988, when like favelas in Brazil and poor communities in Atlanta are basically bulldozed to make space for Olympic villages and stuff. And athletes don't necessarily get rich off of it. You have people doing GoFundMes to fund their Olympic journeys, and other people who end up, you know, unhoused after they are famous for a hot minute. So COVID risk and bad economics. So yay Tokyo. Yeah.
So there you go. Yes.
Okay.
All right. But I'll tell you what, and this makes me a bad person in some ways, I know, but I'm still going to watch, right? I mean, I'm still going to watch. I just am.
Of course I'm going to watch. You know?
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Next up, question from Ryan.
Ryan, you're up. Go.
Ryan.
I had a question about how inflation is covered by the media. So if inflation's a self-fulfilling prophecy and talking about it can actually create more of it, then what's the sort of ethical response of the media in how they cover inflation? If you're too alarmist or if you cover it too frequently, could you be making the problem worse? Thanks for making me smart.
Okay, yes. Ouch, Ryan. Hello. I'm sitting right here, man. So look, we think about this a lot, right? And you've heard me the last like 90 days say, yeah, inflation, but let's take a step back here and talk about whether it's going to last, what it really means, how it's showing up, all of this stuff. The bottom line is that inflation can be, yes, a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Because if companies think that prices are going to go up, they think consumers are more used to them and they will just raise the prices anyway. I mean, there are a whole bunch of ways this plays out. But in the news media's defense, it's also a real thing. Inflation happens, and you have to know, and you have to know why. And so that's why we do it. That's my two cents.
Yeah. It also matters sort of who's looking at it and how. This was something that came up in one of those Federal Reserve panels that we and others have been doing about racism in the economy. Mm-hmm. This idea that the narrative about inflation is, you know, essentially filtered from economists who are mostly white through the business and economics news media, which is made up of mostly wealthier white people. And that then filters the messaging around inflation and when it's bad and when it's good and when it's risky and who it's risky for or for whom it's risky, because Betty Reed, sixth grade. and so, you know, we do think about this a lot, and we have conversations about this a lot. It's like, when is it inflation that matters, you know, when someone goes to the grocery store and their food price, like food prices are going up, and lower income people use a larger proportion of their income on food, so that matters a lot. If you're talking about the price of big appliances going up, like, who does that matter, you know, in terms of their finances? And so it's a sticky thing, but yes. We have to cover it a lot because the numbers are doing a lot of crazy things right now because we're coming out of this pandemic and the weird pandemic economy. And so it's something we think a lot about. We discuss a lot, and there are many, many components to how it is discussed. And even, you know, when we're interviewing economists, they're just like, yeah, we don't really know. We've never been here before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a whole lot of we don't really know. But look, let's talk about why, just instead of talking about the coverage of inflation, let's talk about why inflation right now matters in this economy and why the Federal Reserve is deciding to let it run hot. Jay Powell, as everybody who listens to Marketplace knows, has been saying for months now, we believe it's going to be transitory and we're going to let the economy run until we see signs it's actually real and lasting. And here's why he's doing that in no small part. He's doing it because when you let an economy run hot, the gains increasingly, as the hotter it gets, the gains increasingly go to the bottom of the income spectrum. And the bottom of the income spectrum in this economy is disproportionately people of color. And just to point out a thing that we talk about on Marketplace every month when the jobs numbers come out, right? Black unemployment in this economy is 9.2%, right? White unemployment in this economy is like down in, it's like 3.5 or 4. Overall, we're at 5.8 or 5.9, right? And so what Powell and others who are in policymaking positions are doing is intentionally letting it run hot, number one, because we have a labor shortage and we're nowhere near full employment. But the later stages of an expansion are when the bottom of the income spectrum gains. And that's why this conversation about inflation matters. Because for all the people, Larry Summers and many others now increasingly piling on and saying, it's time to stop, it's time to roll back what the Fed is doing, the catch is that if you let it go, more people will benefit. And if Powell believes it's transitory and he says he's got the tools, then that's what he's going to do.
He and the other policymakers are betting a lot on that.
Right.
That's how it's going to work out.
For sure.
But it is a gamble. It's a risk because we've not been here before. All right.
You bet.
Next question.
Yes. Mike in Idaho. I almost said Ohio. Sorry. Idaho. Can you speculate, he writes, on the what if scenario of where the U.S. and the globalized economy would be at, pandemic and all, if the Trans-Pacific Partnership had passed back in 2016, what would China's economy look like, similar and different to today? And what is the latest TPP-like agreement currently in the works, if any? Huh. Fascinating. Really interesting question.
You're the one who talked to Obama about the TPP.
I did talk to Obama about the TPP. Sadly, it was many years ago. Let's remember that this is the big trade deal of which the United States was going to be a part, and China was not, crafted in no small part to make sure that the United States and Western countries had, well, not Western countries, but, you know, Japan and Pacific Rim countries, had leverage against the rising Chinese economic threat, which is very real. President Trump pulled out of it on like day one that he was in office. But we went to Susan Aronson. She's a trade expert at George Washington University for the answer to the question of what if?
One might argue that we would have had better relations with many of the fastest growing trade economies in the world. And that could be helpful during the pandemic. But it is very unlikely that China would ever join TPP.
Having better relationships with these economies, namely Pacific Rim countries. And you know what they make in some of these Southeastern Asian countries?
Oh, I do. I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
They make chips. They make semiconductor chips.
Yes, they do.
Which we really need right now.
We did not plan that out. She asked the question and I knew the answer. That's right.
Those nice relationships and lowered trade barriers might have been helpful when we were trying to address supply chain shortages for masks and other materials needed during the pandemic. And
So we are talking to Asian Pacific countries, of course, but there's no big TPP deal in the works. I mean, that thing took forever. And then it got torpedoed and everybody, you know, and this is what happens when you pull out unilaterally of these big bilateral agreements. Everybody looks at you and says, are you for real? Can we trust you? We saw that when Biden went to Europe, right? I mean, yes, it was NATO and political military stuff, but that's exactly what the allies do. They look at you and say, okay, but are you going to be here in 5 years? And you almost can't make that promise now, which is kind of cray cray.
Speaking of political and military stuff, namely, this last question is for you, Kai. It's a voicemail that someone left at that fancy new Make Me Smart phone number. It comes from Josh at the Naval Air Station in Pensacola.
I was just calling to ask, as a new officer in the Air Force, what skills can I develop and what skills can I encourage my airmen to develop to make us more marketable once we get those DD-214s? Love the show. Thanks.
Yeah, it's a really good question, Josh.
DD-214
is the official discharge paperwork. So when you get out of the service, they give you this thing called a DD-214, and that is your ticket to veterans benefits and travel and discount and all those kinds of things. So when you get your DD-214, put it in a safe deposit box somewhere and just carry around copies if you need it. Here is the upshot of this whole thing. And full disclosure, Bridget slacked me earlier today and said, hey, we got this question from this guy in Pensacola. Can you answer it? And I said, sure, I can. And I thought about it for a while. And it comes down this way, just in terms of skill sets. Number one, if you enter the military at whatever level with a specific technical skill that you are being trained in, whether it's avionics or cryptology or foreign languages or whatever, that is a huge step up. And you can translate, you can use that in a civilian setting. But I have to tell you, I actually think that the skills that are most transferable and most usable are the intangibles that I got out of my military service. And I've told this a bajillion times, but the only reason I'm in radio and broadcasting at all is that when I applied for this internship at KQED, I was able to say on my little application letter, look, I am widely experienced, I am deeply traveled, and I'm pretty well educated in affairs of the world. And that gets you somewhere. You have a sense of professionalism and obligation and duty and follow through and discipline. And not everybody has that. Lots of people have it outside the military without military service. But I'm telling you, you can't get through military service in a good way without those things. And that, I think, is the payoff, I guess, coming out into the civilian world, you know?
If I can add my civilian perspective to this, I live here in D.C. where there are a lot of service members and veterans here working in both the public and private sector. And what they often tell me is how important it is to know very deeply how your benefit systems work, because there are veterans who come out of the service that have a ton of options and opportunities, but because they don't know what is available to them or how to navigate the system properly, they lose out on those benefits. And so I think just from what I've heard from people, that just learning early what is available and how to navigate that system is crucial for getting the most out of what your service entitles you to.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Great punctuation mark. And with that, we're done. What do you want to know Wednesday for the 14th of July, 2021 is in the books. Back tomorrow. In the meanwhile, keep sending your questions. Make me smart at marketplace.org or leave us a voicemail. Our number is 508-827-6278, 508-82-SMART. And that's where we are. We're leaving. We're going. We are going.
It's so cute.
It's really good. I like it.
It is. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Today's program was engineered by Juan Carlos Torrado.
Ben Tolliday, who I saw today, by the way, at Marketplace World Headquarters. She's doing well. Says hi to everybody. Came in to have lunch with Jeff Peters. Yep, doing really well. Anyway, Ben and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Have not seen Daniel in a while. Senior producer is Bridget Bodner. And we're done. We're out.
Yeah.
Now I have to check the slide to see if I forgot anything.
Oh, no, it was just Bridget yelling at you, as per you laid out at the beginning.
Look at this, 3:30 cut. Chose violence this afternoon. I don't even know what that means.
You did, though.
Wow, okay.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.